Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We just talked about immunotherapy and how it's being used to treat cancer today. And we'll take a look into the future a bit now with our next guest, Dr. Douglas McNeil. Dr. McNeil is a professor of medicine at UW School of Medicine and Public Health, a medical oncologist with UW Health, and we'll talk about the possibility of a cancer vaccine that could target tumors like those found in prostate cancer. So, as we talk with Dr. McNeil, I hope you'll join in. What would you like to know about how the vaccine works? What questions do you have about prostate cancer treatments? Love to hear from you. You can give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Douglas McNeil, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Sure.
We were just talking with our last guest about immunotherapy. How does it work in a vaccine form?
Sure. Well, when most people think about vaccines, they're thinking about something that they receive in order to prevent them from getting a disease. I mean, it's certainly on everybody's mind now in the COVID pandemic that we're using vaccines to mount an immune response that will protect against challenge from that. The situation's a little bit different in cancer because people already have the disease. So the goal of a vaccine in that setting isn't so much preventative, although there are some groups looking at preventative vaccines. Really, the goal is to amplify immune cells to be able to recognize the cancer and treat the cancer that way.
So similar
to what you heard from Dr. Ma, where there are therapies now to kind of activate cells overall, the goal of vaccines is to activate specific populations of cells that are maybe more specific for cancer.
Where is the research right now? What stage are we in?
Well, frankly, there are a lot of things. And in fact, the future is now. We actually have an approved vaccine as a treatment for prostate cancer. It's a treatment called Provenge or Cipollucel-T that was approved about 12 years ago as a treatment for men with very advanced cancer. But there are groups around the country and around the world looking at other kinds of different ways of giving a vaccine to mount an immune response. So here at the university, we've been conducting studies using a specific type of vaccine called a DNA vaccine, which is very much like the RNA vaccines of Pfizer and Moderna that have been used for COVID. We've been studying this kind of vaccine approach for a number of years, and we've been testing two different vaccines that are in phase two clinical trials.
So somebody might ask, well, what's the difference here between the DNA type vaccine and the RNA type vaccine?
Sure. What happens in the in a cell is DNA encodes particular proteins. The DNA is made into RNA, and then the RNA is made into proteins. So they're basically just sort of one step removed. An RNA molecule, when delivered as a vaccine, gets into a cell and it produces a protein that then is presented to immune cells. In the case of DNA, the DNA has to get into the cell and make RNA and then make protein. So it's one step removed, a little bit less efficient.
So, you know, I'm of a certain age where prostate cancer I don't think I have prostate cancer right now, but since your focus is on prostate cancer, I'm pleased to hear that. Why is prostate cancer a candidate for a vaccine like this?
Sure. Yeah. Well, we first got interested in this idea because prostate cancer is a disease where many men can do well for a number of years. But we know that people with prostate cancer, men that were diagnosed with prostate cancer, probably two-thirds of them that have everything confined to the prostate, if they then undergo surgery or radiation therapy, about two-thirds are cured. But about a third of men, and that's quite a substantial number of men because it's the most commonly diagnosed cancer in the United States, will have the disease recur. And so our original thought a number of years ago was that if we could create a tissue rejection response, so using vaccines to mount an immune response against the tumor, that this might be a way to kind of get rid of any of these microscopic cells that are still hanging around and will eventually grow out to become tumors in the future.
So we talked about with Dr. Ma about side effects. Are there side effects to this sort of treatment?
Frankly, there have been very, very few. Most with vaccines alone, most of the side effects that people have seen have been reactions at the site of immunization, sometimes some fevers and chills. I think people going through COVID vaccinations are aware that lots of times you can have, you know, fevers and chills and things like that. Most those have not been so dramatic, actually, in most of the vaccine trials, but those can happen.
Dr. Douglas McNeil, our guest, as we talk about his work with cancer treatment vaccines, he does obviously does a lot of work with prostate cancer and those vaccines. And you can join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. So there's been this vaccine that's been in use for, you said, 12 years, and has it been effective? Must have been if it's been used for 12 years.
Right. Well, it was demonstrated that people that got the vaccine did better in clinical trials than the people that didn't, and they lived longer, and that was the reason why it was approved. But it's a different kind of a therapy. It's a little bit cumbersome. One has to have their cells collected and then shipped across country for manufacturing, and those cells are shipped back and infused into the patient. So it's a little bit of a complicated procedure, and it's also it's different than the other therapies that we use. So, for example, if we give other common therapies, we can check a blood marker called the PSA blood test. And we expect after treatment that the PSA blood test will go down and that we'll, if we check on scans, we'll see that things shrink. And these are methods that we use and that patients are kind of relying on to make sure that their treatment worked. In the case of the vaccine, we didn't really see PSAs go down. We didn't see tumors shrinking. We just saw that patients lived longer. And that's a harder kind of a treatment for patients to kind of get their arms around, and for physicians also to get their arms around.
Yeah, that makes sense. What's a normal PSA number?
Well, in general, for men without prostate cancer and without signs or symptoms of prostate cancer, it's usually less than 4 nanograms per milliliter. 4 is the kind of the number.
I gotcha. So let's talk some more about the clinical trial that you're working on right now.
Sure. So we've been interested in, when we started this work, now almost 20 years ago, there weren't very many trials using DNA vaccines. And so one of our first priorities was to make sure that these kinds of vaccines are safe and that they can elicit immune responses in patients. So those were kind of the goals of our first studies, and we found that those actually, that they were safe, and that they could elicit immune responses. So our next venture was to say, okay, fine, do people do better longer? And if not, why not? we found that it appeared that people that got immune responses did better, but it wasn't sort of a home run. I mean, it wasn't by leaps and bounds. And in the laboratory, we've been studying what happens in the tumor to sort of, if we're generating the right kinds of immune cells, what is the tumor doing to not be recognized? Cancers get very smart and they can evade the immune detection. And so some of these things have been identified. I think some of the kinds of treatments that you heard about from Dr. Ma, called checkpoint molecules. We found that these become activated with vaccination, and then the tumor uses these to turn off the immune cells. And so we found that combining these treatments works better. And so our current trials are looking at combining vaccines with with drugs or agents that can sort of allow these cells to work better once these immune cells get to the tumor.
Wow. So there's a fair amount of experimentation is probably not the right, may not be the right word to use, but maybe it is. I don't know.
Well, a clinical trial is basically an experiment, but I would say that what we're doing is we're learning as we go. And that's how we advance the field is that we take a, we're learning in studies that we do in the laboratory at the same time. And then we're applying those findings to new clinical trials to push things forward and hopefully have things working better in the future.
Yeah, I was thinking about a friend or two of mine who have been involved in, were involved in clinical trials, and you don't, you know, you don't know for sure, but you do know, as one good friend told me, I know I'm helping advance science here a bit, and I'm glad to do it, and hopefully it'll help me too.
That's exactly it. In the cancer field, it's very everybody's getting a treatment for the cancer, and our goal is to make sure that as we move forward, that the treatments get better and hopefully safer.
Our guest today, Dr. Douglas McNeil. Dr. McNeil will be with us right up till 12:30 today, and I've got lots of questions for him about prostate cancer and treatment, and perhaps you do as well. I hope you do, and if you do, give us a call at numbers 800-642-1234 or just send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Again, we'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Dr. Douglas McNeil from the UW. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Talking about the development of a cancer vaccine on the show today. Larry Mueller here. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network and zeroing in on a vaccine, the vaccine research relating to prostate cancer with our guest, Dr. Douglas McNeil, professor of medicine at UW School of Medicine and Public Health and a medical oncologist with UW Health. So as we talk with him about prostate cancer, and I should say it's affects 1 in 8 men in the U.S., prostate cancer. More than 5,500 people will be diagnosed with it in Wisconsin in 2022. So believe me, it's not an insignificant disease. And Dr. McNeil has spent a lot of his career working on prostate cancer and on these vaccines as a treatment. I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments as we move along today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. And I'm going to start this segment with a call, as a matter of fact. Dave in Madison, thank you for calling, and tell us what's on your mind.
Larry, and Dr. McNeil, thank you for taking my call. I'm a participant in your clinical trial at UW, and I have a question for you regarding the combination of vaccine therapy and hormone therapy. And I'm curious why is that undertaken in the trial? And my second question would be, how was the length of the therapies determined, or how did you arrive at that? And I guess a final question, and I'll take them off the air, is are there other similar studies going on at other research institutions throughout the country? And thank you, Doctor, for your commitment to this area.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Dave. Yes, a common treatment for prostate cancer is something we call androgen deprivation. It's lowering testosterone. It's the standard treatment that we do for prostate cancer that recurs. And we use that. We've been using it for probably over 60 years because we know that prostate cancer feeds on testosterone. And so that's one of the first things is try to deprive it. It turns out that in addition to having effects on the cancer itself, it also has effects. We know in mice and rats and people that get this testosterone lowering therapy that it activates T cells. It activates cells of the immune system, and they rush into the prostate cancers and the normal prostate. And so we're trying to time this and use it specifically as a therapy that we already use, and specifically time it with vaccines. So the timing and the sequence of those things are things that we've been studying in the laboratory and then now testing in a clinical trial. So we found that, you know, using vaccine before we use the hormonal therapy looks to be better. And so that's why we're testing it in that way.
Hmm. Thank you again for that call. Let's go to Carl in Woodstock, Illinois. Carl, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I'm a 64-year-old male, and I have a high PSA count. I was at 8.5 for a few years, and now I'm down to 7.75. I avoided the probing biopsies, and I was wondering how I could join your study on the doctor there.
Hmm. That's a good thing to talk about, how patients can get into these trials.
So, Carl, yeah, I appreciate the question. So the difference in what we're doing is we're not looking at a vaccine to necessarily prevent the development of cancer, but to actually treat cancer that we know about. So if the PSA is elevated, I'd recommend or suggest you might talk with your doctor if whether or not it would be a good idea to get a little bit more investigation. But in people that have cancer, there are, I think we have two different clinical trials that are ongoing at the university. And if people are welcome to take a look online or call the cancer center, the UW Cancer Center, and that's how patients would become get information and be able to participate in clinical trials.
And on these trials, are they blind trials or double blind trials or not?
No, the studies that we're doing, no, everybody knows what they're getting.
That's reassuring.
That's right.
And how long do these trials, or you know, for an individual patient, how long would that continue?
That's a great question, and it kind of depends. So we have a trial going on now where patients that are planning to undergo surgery for prostate cancer, where they're getting treated with immune therapy before they go to surgery, and that process is of a period of 3 months before surgery. We have other trials or another trial in patients with more advanced prostate cancer that's come back and has already metastasized. And in that one, we're basically treating as long as we think patients are benefiting and as long as the disease remains stable or responding. So the patients can be treated up to even 2 years.
So have there been some successes in these trials?
Yes. So we've just recently reported that combining what I was mentioning, that of combining vaccine with some of these other therapies that can or a therapy that can maintain the efficacy of the cells that are activated by vaccination, that with this combination therapy, we see patients doing better than what we've seen traditionally in the past. And so we're planning trials now going forward where we're testing those combinations further, and then asking whether patients treated with this combination of a vaccine and a checkpoint inhibitor, if those patients do better than receiving other standard therapies. So those are that's at least a trial that we're anticipating, hopefully opening soon.
Richard in Westfield, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I don't know if the doctor can answer this or not, but I live down in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and on the 9th of March, I had PAE, prosthetic arterioembolization, done by an interventional radiologist. Down there, there's only two physicians or radiologists that actually perform that surgery. I feel like it's been successful in that I believe my prostate has been shrunk. There were no signs of cancer, but I'm just wondering if there's any research or information to confirm that once you have an enlarged prostate, that there might be a higher likelihood of getting cancer of the prostate at a later date.
Okay.
Great question. So we know that as men get older, that it's very common for the prostate to enlarge, and this causes a lot of some of the urinary symptoms of having to urinate frequently and to get up in the night more than once to urinate. And that can be a normal thing. That can be just a not necessarily related to prostate cancer. It's a little bit hard to tease out because both prostate cancer and this benign prostatic hypertrophy or BPH, they both tend to be more common in older men. And so it's hard sometimes to distinguish one or the other. I think the bottom line is that if people are having urinary symptoms, it's a good idea to see their regular physician and maybe eventually see a urologist to take a look and identify whether it is a benign thing or whether it is related to prostate cancer.
Richard, thank you very much. George in Wanakee will turn to you next. Hi, George.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a call or a question regarding what I consider perhaps a myth regarding the difference between slow-growing and fast-growing prostate cancer. I have two friends who back in when they were in their 50s wound up having surgery because they were both diagnosed with what were considered fast-growing cancers of the prostate. I have other friends now that I'm 75, I have other friends who are like in their 80s and have now been diagnosed with what is being determined or what has been referred to as a slower growing cancer. And then the attitude is at that age, if you're developing a cancer, a prostate cancer, it's likely that some other issue will kill you before that cancer will. Can you speak to that issue at all?
All right, George, thank you for calling.
Thanks, George. That's a great question. Prostate cancer, the average age that people are diagnosed with prostate cancer is about 65. So 100 years ago, that was really old. Now it's not so old. If people are diagnosed, most people that tend to be diagnosed when they're much older than that, the disease in general tends to be a little bit more benign. So you're absolutely right, and that gets factored into the decisions about what we do with it if it is diagnosed. But there also tends to be a disease, again, there are generalities and then, you know, there are always exceptions to the rule, but we see a lot of men that are diagnosed with at a younger age in their 40s and 50s. And those men tend to have a more aggressive disease. Sometimes there are family inheritance, people that are where prostate cancer runs in the family, and those men tend to be younger. Also, African-American men tend to have a more aggressive disease and are often diagnosed younger. And so those are nuances that, you know, make it important to identify it and then consider different kinds of treatments. Because obviously a person in their 50s, 60s, even 70s can live a long life and not have to be bothered by prostate cancer. And so there are treatments that are appropriate for those individuals.
All right, George, thank you again. You could join in too, number 800-642-1234. Give a call. Bob emailed to ask about a normal time for recovery from prostate surgery. He's 72 years old, fit individual who had surgery performed 10 weeks ago, wants to get back to normal workout routines and so forth, but his stamina just doesn't seem to be there. right now after 10 weeks?
Bob, that's probably a better question for the urologist than for me. I'm a medical oncologist. But in general, yeah, we'd expect you to be getting back to your normal routines. So within 12 weeks, we'd expect you to be getting back into your more normal routines.
So it's been 10 weeks for you, Bob. So a couple more weeks perhaps to go. But if it doesn't return, should he go back to his doctor?
Yep. Yeah, he should talk with his urologist.
Yeah, for sure. If he's just not getting, doesn't have that stamina that he once had. Here's one I'm not sure if you're going to be able to answer this or not. Gene emailed that in the early 1900s, a Dr. Cooley, a C-O-L-E-Y, used a combination of bacteria and other materials, I guess they called them Cooley's toxins, to treat over 1,000 mostly end-stage cancers. And he reportedly had a 60% success rate. Gene wonders why not reintroduce this easier to administer and cheaper treatment?
That's a great question. It's actually the study of these Cooley's toxins is actually what launched a lot of studies into using the immune system to treat cancer. So back in that time, the simple thought was what they had observed is that people that got infections in some ways tended to have many patients with infections tended to have responses in their cancers. And there were some anecdotal cases of, you know, people with very large infections that where the cancers were eradicated. And so they used this by actually giving people infections and then eventually sort of ground up bacteria, what were called the Cooley's toxins. So, it's become a bit more refined. We now understand what was in those bacteria that can augment immune responses. And so these are directions that are being explored. There are now several companies that are developing sort of the parts of those bacteria that amplify up immune responses. And they're looking at these, delivering these as treatments or delivering them with other types of therapies. So you're absolutely right. It was an interesting area. It had a lapse of about 100 years, but you'll be grateful to know that we won't give people infections in order to treat their cancer.
Okay. There we go. Thanks for that question. Someone else wonders, and I think we may have talked about this, but what is the standard treatment or what is the treatment for prostate cancer right now? Or is there just one or are there a bunch of them?
Turns out there are a bunch of them. So normally if a person is diagnosed with prostate cancer and everything appears to be confined to the prostate, then they'll usually either have surgery, what's called a prostatectomy to remove the prostate and the cancer, or they'll have radiation therapy. Radiation therapy to just sort of neutralize it in place, but to leave the prostate there. If the cancer comes back, and we use this PSA blood test often to take a look to see if there's any residual cancer in the body after all of this is done, we follow that over time to see if there's any evidence of the cancer coming back. And if it does come back, then there are a bunch of treatments that we take a look at and that's a rapidly expanding area because in the last year there have been at least 10 new treatments for cancers that have come back after things have spread.
For maybe we should talk about what should men know kind of about prostate cancer. I mean, are there symptoms? What are the symptoms if there are any?
Sure. So the prostate is a gland that sits right underneath the bladder and it surrounds the urethra. So the most common thing is that if there's a cancer in there, it's putting pressure on the urethra. That's sort of like crimping the garden hose. So the pressure just builds up behind it and it causes difficulties with urination. Frequent urination, sometimes pain with urination, getting up multiple times at night are often common symptoms. if the cancer has spread to other organs, the most common places that it goes are to lymph nodes into the bones. So we're seeing patients where if it wasn't detected and if it's spread, then many patients will sort of present to medical attention with pain in the bones from cancer that's spread there.
And
we like to find it before that.
Yeah, so. And is the PSA, is that how it's diagnosed?
Typically, yes. So a PSA blood test, if it's elevated, usually prompts the physicians to take a look for to see if there might be prostate cancer. And then really the test is to get a biopsy or a sample of the prostate under, so that to take a look at it under the microscope and see if there's cancer there.
So just kind of looking ahead, I mean, you've been doing this research and it's been great research for a long time. What do you think the future is for vaccines in fighting these cancers?
I think they are going to be a part of it. Within the last 10 years or so, a little bit more than 10 years, we've seen a big increase in the use of immune therapies for the treatment of cancer. And in fact, now, whereas 15 years ago, almost no patients with cancer were treated with immune therapies, now about a third of patients receive immune-based therapy. So it's really revolutionized the treatment. The problem is that most of the therapies that we have right now are not very specific. They kind of rev up the whole body's immune system to hopefully recognize cancer, and they're not very specific. So vaccines are a way to sort of guide the ship and sort of focus the immune response against particular targets that we want to target. So I think they'll become parts of combination approaches that we will use in the future.
And your own research, where is that headed?
Precisely in that way. We're very interested in vaccines to activate cells of the immune system that recognize prostate tumors. And then in the lab, we're interested in what happens in the tumor to avoid detection and then figure out how to overcome those barriers and then introduce those as part of our treatments.
And how's the work funded typically?
Great question. So we're funded by grants from the National Institutes of Health. Actually, the Department of Defense funds quite a bit of cancer-related research. It's money apportioned by Congress that's administered through the Department of Defense. And we have funding, from the Prostate Cancer Foundation.
So a number of different sources for this, and you're doing some marvelous work here, Dr. McNeil. I want to thank you so much, not only for being here today, but for all of your lifetime of work in this area. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I hope we have a chance to do it again. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Larry. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and with everybody today.
Dr. Douglas McNeil is a professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health and a medical oncologist with UW Health. And he's been working in this area for a long, long time. They've had some successes, and they're looking for even more of them down the road. It's a pleasure to be able to talk with him today. Looking ahead to tomorrow, the House Committee on the look into the terrible riot in the Capitol will not be going on tomorrow, so we will be back with our normal programming, and PJ Leash is back to talk about mosquito treatments and prevention and the viburnum leaf beetle. That's from 11 to 12:30 tomorrow. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.